I reminisce for a spell, or shall I say, think back 22 years ago to keep it on track. The birth of a child on the 8th of October.
Welcome back to KPFK Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock hour. This is 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. Just before I get into Richard, I wanted to say that, give out the phone number for phone calls that we're going to have later. That's 1-800-985-5735, 985-KPFK. So right now on the phone we have Richard Moore, who for the past 14 years has been part of the Southwest Network for Environmental and Economic Justice, SNEEJ, as we talk about in the movement. And they're a coalition of 75 grassroots groups from Mexico, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, California, Nevada. I'm sure there's another couple.
Yeah, Colorado, but that's
And I think, well, we're really excited to have Rich on the phone because he's been on the ground organizing for 30 years. So, Richard, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be on this program. It's one of my favorite programs, so it's an honor to be on.
Yeah, and you're one of our favorite guests. People might have remembered Richard from the special that we did on Corky Gonzalez a while back. It's a lot of the really, really incredible things that he brought back historically. So, Richard, I read that you scored a huge, huge victory in New Mexico against the Minutemen, specifically that you got the governor, Bill Richardson, to declare, one, New Mexico an immigrant-friendly state, and two, state publicly that he was going to pressure city, county, and state officials to prosecute vigilantes like the Minutemen.
That's correct. What I should say, you know, we've been at this now within the Southwest Network. We've been in coalitions, you know, with other groups in New Mexico that are not affiliated to the Southwest Network.
Okay.
Just really trying to build, broaden, and strengthen the work around undocumented workers and immigrant communities and so on. And so there's been a series of activities that have taken place, demonstrations in Santa Fe at the Capitol, meetings. This meeting, as you're talking about, we had a meeting with Governor Bill Richardson several weeks ago. And I think two or three things I think we should keep in mind as we're having this discussion.
Okay.
One is, one of the things that we asked the Governor Richardson to do was to do a governor's executive order, as you said, declaring New Mexico an immigrant-friendly state and support immigrant-friendly legislation. I think the governor's executive order is very, very crucial. It's not the first time that a governor of the state of New Mexico would have done this under Tony Anaya. When Tony was governor of the state of New Mexico, he put out an executive order. That's very important, Demon, to us, because some of the other things that we discussed in that meeting was then that actually an executive order, a governor's executive order, would then put on notice city, county, and state governments that the way that undocumented people are being treated here in communities, in workplaces, and in schools. You may have heard most recently, several months ago, three or four students were pulled out of a high school here by immigration and deported back to Mexico. So one of the things, as I say, this executive order will do is not just state agencies. It will put county, city, and state agencies on notice that business as usual in this state will not continue to happen.
And Richard, how much teeth does an executive order have? Like, how enforceable is it?
Well, what I will say, and we've been in and out of the executive orders over the last several or many years, probably the teeth that's in it is what the organizations put behind it, quite frankly.
Right.
I mean, I think good, solid, community-based organizations that know how to work memorials or executive orders can really push that forward. And so I think an executive order it doesn't have per se legal binding, but it sure has the strength that it ain't going to be business as usual. And if the local groups stay on it, which we're all committed to do, then we can deal with these county, city, and state agencies.
And that's also which has the whole thing about the law enforcement and pushing it to actually do it. That would be included in this executive order?
Exactly. It would be sheriff's departments, city police, state police. I mean, there's different things happening here, and you know, some of the similar things are happening in the state of California, in Southern California, where even our sisters and brothers are taking their families to parks and so on for the weekends, just to fish or hang out, cool out, or whatever. If a park official comes up and asks any of our folk for ID, and if they choose, in fact, that they need further documentation. We've seen park officials and others turn our folk over to immigration, and so it does have some teeth on, and it, the teeth is what we make it. But we're pretty proud of the fact. Now I do have to say that since the meeting, Damon, since the meeting, our staff here, along with others, other organizational representatives, have been in consultation, you can say, with the general counsel, the lead general counsel for the governor. And we're attempting to pound out that executive order as we speak.
Okay, good. So what is this executive order, or the victory before the executive order, what does that mean on the ground for the Minutemen as they're trying to assemble and patrol, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, part of the interesting thing was is that the article that was front page Albuquerque Journal around the Minutemen coming into Columbus and Columbus is in New Mexico. It's the New Mexico side, and then Palomas is the other place. That article came out front page in the Albuquerque Journal with the interviews from we'll call so-called leadership of the Minutemen organization, saying that they were coming into New Mexico. Now, there has been rumors of that. They spoke to that. We've seen it on different national TV programs and so on. But this has been the first formal public announcement that they were coming into New Mexico in August or September. So very clearly then, in our discussions again with the governor, and I have to be quite frank with you. I mean, we're going to be frank. We're all in this thing together.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, Damon, that we mentioned to the governor, if any of us, I mean, if any of us in the state of New Mexico, grassroots groups or others, were to say publicly that we were arming ourselves and going to the Mexico-U.S. border, say, for example, to make sure that immigration and others didn't mistreat undocumented workers as they were coming across, we know what the consequence of that would be. I mean,
worse than the Panthers back in the day in California.
Exactly. From the Panthers from then and from the Black Berets, which is a Latino youth organization here in New Mexico in the 60s and the 70s. So, you know, so what are we really talking about here? Now, we're talking about two different groups. I do understand that. But on the other side of that, let's be real about this. We would have had the police tracking us down or whatever as soon as the press conference, right after the press conference took place. So what are we going to do about it? Is it equal stuff that we're talking about here, or are some people going to be treated different than others? Are the Minutemen going to be welcomed in the state of New Mexico with our hands open and this kind of thing, which didn't take place, as you all know, did not take place in Arizona?
Mm-hmm.
And so will that happen here? The governor says that they're not welcomed in the state of New Mexico, so he needs to take a public position on that. And we have been in touch with his office since that announcement was made.
So, well, then let's kind of switch over a little bit to Arizona. Larry Deaver, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
The Cochise County Sheriff in Arizona, he was actually quoted in an AP press article saying that he fears that immigrant smugglers might open fire on Minutemen volunteers, which is like, all right, that's one way of looking at it. So clearly he has been complicit in this. I think in the last 5 years also read there's several other different groups that they've kind of, I think it's American Border Patrol, Homeland Civil Defense, basically use Cochise County as a base of operation. And I know you've been doing stuff to actually pressure him. What are some of those things that you're doing?
Well, we've initiated an email campaign to the sheriff and to the governor of the state of Arizona. We've had fax campaigns that we've done. We've had telephone campaigns to both of their offices and so on. And we've had visits by grassroots affiliated organizations and non-affiliated organizations of the Southwest Network, both with him and so on. Now, I know to some extent we jump back and forth, you know, or I jump back and forth, a better way to say it, from Arizona to New Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and then even working our way up and down the Mexico-U.S. border.
Right.
But I think, again, it is. As you said, that little tip of Arizona has been a stronghold for the original Minutemen organization, the one that came out of the 60s and the 70s, the Minutemen organization in the 60s and the 70s that was responsible for the assassination of many of our sisters and brothers in this movement. Now, I'm not saying that this Minutemen project is the same as that Minutemen organization, but what I will say is that that also, that little tip of Arizona, there has been a stronghold for the militia groups, for Minutemen type, and for others that have been there. So it did not surprise me, quite frankly, them, and that we would get the kind of response from the sheriff that we got, because quite frankly, many a times, it's hard to separate out whether a sheriff or whoever is speaking for the sheriff's department or speaking for the Minutemen organization.
Right. So there also have been reports that actually this is just not talking about the actual Minutemen. There have been reports that they actually have detained people and stopped people and kept them against their will. What are some of the things that you've been hearing on their actually activities and their numbers? Because I know there's the New Mexico, there's Arizona, but then also there's talking about going to California, and I would imagine since Texas also shares a big kind of border, what are they doing right now?
Well, I mean, again, you know what I should say, even if we look at San Diego and some of the other places, you know, it was never quite surprising, even at the San Diego airport last year and the year before last, where another organization in Southern California was there, had what called security T-shirts on or whatever, border security or whatever, and were asking people for ID as they were coming into to the airport in San Diego and so on. This is just a continuation of legalizing much of the reactionary element, the right-wing element, the racism that this government, that the U.S. government is supporting and carrying out in practice and implementing in many cases. So when we look at it up and down the border, then we see that that President Bush, two local elected officials, another, have given the moral and political authority for these right wing racist organizations to come forward. Many of them used to hide under hoods and so on, and in some cases they still do. But right now they're wearing suits and ties, blue jeans, T-shirts, and so on. And as we can see, particularly in media, on TV and others, they're very vocal about their racism, and they're given the opportunity to espouse that racism up and down the airways and the and TVs and so on of mass media in this country.
Mm-hmm. The ACLU, I know you guys are working with, and they're talking. I read some things around what the Minutemen do are actually illegal. It's not like citizens' arrest and whatnot. It's actually something that they're doing illegal. At the same time, you have the Department of Homeland Security saying, I think it was like more than 500 extra troops to reinforce the border. And it's also put on the side of like to protect from possible terrorists and people coming illegally across the border, not protecting against these people who, you know, are breaking the law, harassing people, detaining people, et cetera. What is the Department of Homeland Security's role at this particular point? Are they doing anything to help the
situation? Let me make this comment and answer the question.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, we've seen the deaths of sisters and brothers, whether it's from the heat, whether it's health reasons, whether it's people found in the back of trucks, or whatever. We've seen that pattern all throughout these years, hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of undocumented people dying in some cases and being shot and killed in some cases by immigration and others attempting to come into to the U.S. From the Mexico border. Now, the other comments to make on this citizen's arrest, that very, very clearly interests us here in New Mexico, because in 1970, we attempted to make a citizen's arrest on the warden, we meaning an organization I was in then, the Black Brer organization, and we attempted to make a citizen's arrest, which is in the Constitution of the state of New Mexico, on the warden at the state penitentiary for violation of civil rights, assault with intent to kill. We had the documentation and so on. We were arrested attempting to make a citizen's arrest, which is in the Constitution in New Mexico that we have a right to do that. We had asked the Sheriff's Department and others to join us in terms of arresting the warden and so on, because we were there to serve a warrant on him. Now, when you see that again, here we go again, citizen's arrest. Whether it's Arizona, whether it's New Mexico, wherever it may be. Now, what is then some of this difference that we're talking about when grassroots groups working on immigration, economic justice, environmental justice, whatever it may be, civil rights issues, social justice issues. I mean, where is this kind of support to grassroots groups when we're attempting to, in some cases, reach out to local governments and elected officials and some of the others? No? Where, in fact, has it been? So we see this trend here of the legalization of racism, the legalization of right-wing organizations, given the moral, as I said, and political authority by city, county, state, and federal governments to be able to do the kind of things that they're doing up and down the Mexico-U.S. border.
So I guess the final question before you give out your contact information for people who want to get more information is, at this particular time, one thing when I read this, I was like, wow, that's big. Even if it's, you know, kind of like, I was like, what is an immigrant friendly state or whatnot? I think it's a huge, huge, huge ideological victory at this particular time to say anything pro-immigrant, like anything. So I just think that's really, really important. And I know, and also in this time, it's a lot of folks who are not trying to focus on race, not trying to focus on nationality, and the work that you're doing is directly, directly tied to that. So I wanted to see how you, how SNEEJ and the organizations that are working with you are framing the debate around immigration, because there's the, we don't want illegal immigrants, quote unquote, you know, that everybody's saying, but then we also know California, Arizona, all these states' economies are so tied into the fact that people from Mexico or from other countries are coming in to actually do work. So how are you unpacking that issue for folks?
Well, I think one of those pieces that I think is important to this victory, and I do want to say that it's we will declare it, and we have declared it a victory, and now it's in the hands of us and the governor to make sure that everything that he committed himself to, that he lives up to. Mm-hmm. So one of those pieces then is this up-and-coming Border Governors Conference that'll be happening August and September, where the governor of California, Arizona, New Mexico, all the border state governors in Mexico and on the U.S. side will be coming together.
And when is that?
That's scheduled, from what we understand. We're trying to verify the information for August or September, and we're trying to get its location because we will be there.
Okay. Well, definitely we keep us in. I mean, no, you are. We'll get your email, but but I think that's really important. We will want to bring that out to people so they can come through.
Exactly. We need to mobilize hundreds, if not thousands, of people to that location, just calling for the demands of what many groups throughout the Southwest and Western Mexico are working on. The other piece, as I said, in terms of the framing, and you tagged it there, four of the states that we work in, the Southwest Network, Arizona, California, and New Mexico and Texas, are border states to the country of Mexico. It's not easy for us, nor has it ever been, nor will we ever attempt it to be, where the relationships between those sisters and brothers in Mexico and on the U.S. side, first of all, those four states at one point were part of the country of Mexico.
Right.
We've got a lot of similarities, obviously, in history and culture and so on, and we've got a lot of things, quite frankly, that we need to iron out with each other.
And that's definitely, from what I hear about your actually organizing plan, the bi kind of national organizing plan.
Exactly. And many of those organizations that you mentioned that were affiliated to Southwest Network, many of those are organizations in Mexico, particularly on the northern borders of Mexico. So it's not a separate piece for us. It's all the way from Denver to, you know, from Colorado to the state of Chihuahua, or, you know, Tijuana to, you know, to further in the state of California. Baja, you know, as we said, you know, that kind of thing. So we have to be able to collectivize our joint strategies, and not let them, whether it's governments or others, separate us from the realities of our history, our culture, and what we need to do to make our communities and workplaces a better place for all of us to live in, and work and struggle together, huh? And struggle together in the most productive manner as possible. Struggle together, talk about issues, be supportive of each other, and continue to consolidate our movement. So that's what we're all about, is the consolidation of our movement and acquiring as many victories as we can up and down the Mexico-U.S. border.
Okay. So, Richard, why don't you give us some contact information in case people wanted to check you guys out?
Yeah, we can. You could get us, you know, either at area code 505, 242-0416 is our office number in Albuquerque. They could also check our web page, and that would be www.sneej.org, or email us at that's Southwest Network. I'm sorry, the email would come to could come to myself, Richard M. at sneej.org. So those are the three lines of that communication, and if somebody decided to mail us something, we can be reached in Albuquerque, New Mexico at P.O. Box 7399, and the zip code is 87194. And just make it to the attention of Southwest Network, and we will commit to respond back to our sisters and brothers.
Right, Richard Moore from Southwest Network for Economic and Environmental Justice, actually Environmental and Economic Justice. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Good. I wanted to thank you all. Give our best to the best to all of our sisters and brothers in Southern California.
For sure, for sure.
Thank you, brother.
Okay. So when we come back, we are going to be taking your phone calls. The number is 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-KPFK. We have just finished the KPFK fund drive, and I wanted to actually say that if it's not too late to get your thank you gift for donating. So you can also, I guess, do the same number for that. Don't do the same number for that. Go to the web. A voice in my head had just said. And that is www.kpfk.org. And that's including my mom, because she's probably spent like hundreds of dollars already, because she gets really excited about KPFK videos. All your calls, what we want you to talk about, we are at the Voices from the Front Lines are wondering what piques your interest. What would you like us to cover in this next year? Again, that's 818-985-5735, and we'll be right back to take your call.